there. They're all living the devil may care. Well, I'm just a devil with a lot of despair. So viva Las Vegas!
Thank you, Wayne Newton, for that fabulous intro. You're listening to Cats with the Dish. This is John Katzlamitas. I still write for the Cats Report in Las Vegas Weekly Magazine and Las Vegas Sun and all the Greenspun Media Group titles. I don't know if I've even made sense there, but joining me is Tricia McCrone, back from Montana temporarily. How's it going, Disharita?
Yes, I am a little tired. Like marathoning today. We've got some great guests. We've got some great shows this summer. And we're kind of doing a marathon because, let's face it, I'm in town for 30 hours.
We've been busy catching up with our schedule.
Yes, and you have been a busy bee, even though I have been in the middle of nowhere. Montana.
Mm-hmm. But when you're there, it's the middle of somewhere.
And our Montana, even though I've been in our Montana bureau, I have been catching up on what's going on. And something I'm very upset about, because one of the last shows that I went to see before going on my
respite,
yes, was Priscilla, Queen of the Desert.
Yes.
Which has now closed.
It closed earlier than anticipated. And the story about Priscilla, which is a great show.
I am so upset because I want people to run. I was literally like, run to the show. It is so good. It's so funny. It's so great.
It is. It is all of that. And it was its final performance at the Venetian was on July 21st. And it was 5 weeks of a 9 week run. A run that had been shortened from its original 11 weeks when it was first announced, which a lot of people didn't realize. So even by the time it got to Las Vegas, it had been shortened a little bit. And I talked to Base Entertainment co-CEO Scott Zeiger for quite a while about this and other issues about a week ago. And that's the company that produces the show in Las Vegas. And his response was, it spent longer in Las Vegas than it has anywhere else on tour, 5 weeks. It's spending 2 weeks in San Francisco, which might be the best
they
demographic.
They might want to extend there, so to speak.
Well, when they get there, it might be extended.
There you go.
We talk about the show, of course.
It should be.
Shows close was his response. Shows close. And Peep Show is another one Base has.
I was just about to say that Base has. And it's kind of a sad day for
fans of Coco.
Exactly. Or, Coco coincides with Coco, the end of Coco's run. Coco was always supposed to end at this time, or she had extended at some point. And
yeah,
she's always supposed to.
Yeah, you're right. She had extended her commitment to the show by through Labor Day weekend, and the show is ending as her contract does. It's an expensive show, Peep Show. Even with the adjustments they've made over time, there's a lot of licensing costs that they have to
pay for the music.
Those performers are not inexpensive. When you have Josh Strickland in play, you've got top level talent, and you have to pay them for that. And so there are myriad reasons why the numbers weren't exactly matching up for Peep Show over time, but they are saying that they're going to keep the title and bring it back in some reduced form in Las Vegas.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Well, see, Jerry Mitchell, who is the director, producer, everything of Peep Show, he has had a great run in on Broadway with Kinky Boots. I mean, talk about all the Tonys that were won there. I mean, it's like, and it's so funny, just in the Montana Bureau, they are playing Legally Blonde, his other show, at the Big Fork Theater. So I will be going to see that. So I'm a big fan of
that. It's not going to close early.
Yeah, it won't close early. But no, I think it's sad, and it always goes back to the same thing, that here we have at the Smith Center, the Broadway series is doing so well. But then something like Priscilla, Queen of the Desert didn't sell really well. So, I mean, is it something to do with the strip? And that was music that everybody knew. We kind of went with the Jerry Mitchell theme of, well, ABBA did well. I mean, Mamma Mia did well because everyone knows ABBA music. Rock of Ages, everyone knows the music of the 80s. And some other shows were with original music didn't fare well. Well, this show, Priscilla, has a lot of, it's all popular music.
I think there are a number of variables here. They have said, and Zeiger said this, reiterated this, that the ticket selling climate in Las Vegas has changed since the advent of a Mamma Mia. And you have more shows in the same price point or in comparable price points than you've ever had before. And he's right about this. I realized this when I was doing that story about comedy for the Las Vegas Weekly. If you have Cirque du Soleil, all eight of their shows, or seven out of the eight right now, all come down in their summer deals 2-for-1 or close to 2-for-1. Now you have a decision where you can see Priscilla for $75 or Love for $50. You can see Zarkana for $55 or George Wallace for 70. Now you've got Cirque in play all across these this price point in a way that they normally wouldn't be.
Yeah.
And there's and the market isn't moving.
And
it's
also,
not getting
summer
any bigger.
Is notoriously a bad time for shows because and you get a lot of families in and they're not going to spend with their kids and their tickets. They're you know they're not going to spend a lot of money.
And this isn't a family show.
Yeah.
And this is not a family show.
Exactly,
Priscilla is a demographic that has to, as I said, if you don't like flamboyance, you're not going to get this show.
And you have a lot of people that have completely passed out from the fact that they've been drinking all day at the pools. That also comes into play. Really, it's hot. I mean, people get tired. You know, it's you're hanging out at the pool all day. It's a lot. So.
Yeah. Las Vegas is a very,
summer's an interesting time.
Summer's an interesting time. The pricing is...
Cirque
has figured it out. And people who are thriftier than they've ever been, they're smarter about buying tickets, and everybody's in that range from about, you know, like the $49.95 to $125. Everybody seems to be in that range right now, and the market is static.
Well, speaking of a show where you have a lot of Broadway talent, is our guest today that you get to, and it's very affordable.
We are really happy to support and welcome into the studio here after break two members of the Fat Pack at the Plaza. We have Randall Keith and Bruce Ewing, two members of that team. The three main members are all from Phantom Las Vegas Spectacular, and they have a great story to tell, and they sing it well, and they're going to be up after Josh Bell with Movies.
It's Monty Rock the Third, and you're listening to Cats with a Dish.
Can you stay?
You know I can't.
Oh, Gene. I'm so sorry.
I know.
I'll never hurt you or anyone.
It's too late.
That's Hugh Jackman as Wolverine and Famke Janssen as Jean Grey in the X-Men spin-off The Wolverine. I'm Josh Bell, film critic for Las Vegas Weekly, with a look at what's new in theaters this week. A major improvement over the first solo Wolverine movie, The Wolverine sets itself apart as an introspective character study more than an action movie, with a streamlined cast and an emphasis on personal relationships. Although it has plenty of action, including a very impressive sequence set atop a moving bullet train, The Wolverine is really about its main character's inner turmoil, his guilt at causing the death of the woman he loved, and his difficulty at finding a place for himself in the world. I give The Wolverine 3.5 stars out of 5. Also opening this week is Fruitvale Station, starring Michael B. Jordan as Oscar Grant, a young African-American man who was killed by a white transit cop in Oakland in 2009.
You know what, baby? Those are firecrackers. You're safe inside with your cousins.
What about you, Daddy?
Me? Maybe I'm gonna be fine.
The winner of the top prize at this year's Sundance Film Festival, Fruitvale Station follows Grant over the course of his final day alive, using heavy-handed sentiment to portray him as a kind-hearted, friendly guy. The acting is solid, but the movie focuses on the most simplistic aspects of the true story, emphasizing manipulative emotion over complex examination. I give Fruitvale Station 2.5 stars out of 5. That's a look at what's new in theaters this week. Check out my reviews in Las Vegas Weekly and online at joshbellhateseverything.com.
Welcome back. Sitting with us now are a couple of men of a certain age. They were once members of the cast of Phantom Las Vegas Spectacular at the Venetian and are now headlining as part of the comedy music show The Fat Pack. Fat Pack is spelled with a P-H instead of the F to remind us of Phantom.
Yes.
That show runs 5 o'clock each afternoon at the Plaza, dark Mondays and Tuesdays. Welcome to the show, Bruce Ewing and Randall Keith.
Thank you.
Fat Pack. Good to see you guys.
And you're both very slender.
Thank you.
I do have to start that because I have to be honest
that on radio.
With you that I know. I have to be honest with you that when I first heard about you guys, I was like, oh, it's like plus size impersonators of the Rat Pack.
Well, maybe that's the point of the show, is to clear that one up.
And no, that was my initial thing. And then I saw the spelling and I'm like, obviously, I didn't know it was the Phantom part. I thought it was fat, like fat burger. Like, oh, that's fat. That's cool.
Yeah, no, it's for to pay homage to our old job that gave us the money so that we could open our own show.
Yes, exactly.
There you go. And so is that where y'all met?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, Ted and Randall and I, we were all doing Phantom together, and through basically walking out to the garage after the show, trying to figure out what we were going to do when Phantom closed, we came up with this idea, and it developed into this show called The Fatback.
So. And Ted is Ted Keegan, we should mention, and yes. Ted was going to be with us, but he is back with Phantom.
He's back on Broadway with The Phantom for a couple weeks.
Just for a couple of weeks, he'll be
Phantom
back.
Phantom giveth and Phantom taketh away.
Yes, right.
But there's a lot of Broadway going on here with this cast, with your
yes,
group. I
definitely.
Keep saying cast, your group.
Yeah, I mean, we've all had Broadway careers, and Randall was in Les Miserables on Broadway and on the national tour playing Jean Valjean for a number
and
of
I
years.
Want to, right off the bat, say that as men go, that is the most incredible role on Broadway.
It's the best one I've ever done. It's great. It's
and I mean, and I am listening to your voice, I can hear a little Jean Valjean in there.
And I saw him do that long before I knew him, so I've been a Randall Keith fan for years. So.
Well, I am a fan as well.
And then I stalked him, and now we work.
I've been stalking him as well, but he hasn't returned my calls.
Oh, that was you.
You always remember your first stalker, right? And Bruce was in Forever Plaid Flamingo here in Las Vegas and right. At the Gold Coast where I saw the show, and also on tour.
Yeah,
for quite a while.
National tour. Yeah, I was doing the show for the bulk of 12 years. So, right.
So you spent the most time performing in Vegas out of the group.
Yeah, I got here in 96. So when I came for 3 months, I was not going to stay any longer than 3 months, and I'm still here. So that's,
don't we all say that?
Yeah, exactly. I love it here.
So what did you guys think? Let me go back to when Phantom actually was announced it was closing. I mean, did it hit you guys with such surprise that you didn't know what your next move was? I mean, there was a lot of talk kind of in before that the show was maybe not going to be, you know, too much longer of the Venetian,
you know,
but what went through your mind?
Randall? I mean, a lot of actors like to move on and like to and always have something working. I like to sit and get comfortable. This is I was with Les Mis for 9 years before that, 6 years of Phantom on the tour when it first started. So I like to write them out. So I never like to hear when a show is closing because I did not know what was coming next.
And I was with Phantom from year one. So in year one, we heard we were closing. In year mm-hmm. two, we heard we were closing.
Every
in
anniversary.
Three,
was
I mean, yeah, every
the same
everybody
questions.
Was predicting our mm-hmm. closing. So, but we ran over 6 years. So it was an incredible run. So, but it was always a little bit jolting. So many of our cast members have moved out of this profession. And that was part of our goal was we were not going to move out of this profession. We still wanted to continue to sing, so create yourself a job. And that's what we're trying to do, and we're having such a good time doing it.
Yeah, that's apparent. You've got a piano player. It's the three of you and Joey, singer, typically on piano, and with Philip Fortenberry.
And also Philip Fortenberry plays for us sometimes, and David Kunchar plays for us sometimes.
Okay, you've got three rotating pianos. So tell us exactly what the show is when we go into the Plaza at 5 o'clock and see these Broadway stars on stage.
Well, it's a little bit of a nod to Broadway and a little bit of a nod to the Rat Pack, only in as much as those guys, they had such fun. They enjoyed each other's company. They loved their music. They loved to perform. They loved to have a good time with the audience. So that's what we wanted to recreate here. And that's as far as we go with the Rat Pack. But really what we do is we take Broadway music, because of all of our careers have been Broadway, and American Standards, and then Keith Thompson from the conductor of Jersey Boys mm-hmm. has written us some incredible
new material. And the Composer's Showcase. Yeah,
yes, exactly. And he's written us some great stuff. I mean, when we came up with the idea of the Fat Pack, I'm sorry, we called him and he wrote us an amazing 5-minute opener. Then one day we were walking into rehearsal and we all took out our reading glasses as we were just talking about our blood pressure medication and our cholesterol counts. And so we called Keith and we're like, Keith, can you write a song about this? And he wrote a song, Men of a Certain Age. And it's hilarious.
Which is your signature song, right?
Yes.
We love that we're being attached. Yeah, I mean, yes. We're getting asked to sing that a lot. So, mm-hmm. And people do enjoy it with us, you know. So it's a little self-deprecating but fun.
Is there a different feel? Because, I mean, I imagine being a lot of performers that perform their own shows in Vegas. It's kind of a free for all. They kind of, you know, you go by the seat of your pants kind of a thing. Now, after doing Broadway and doing all these incredible shows that you've done, where you have to pretty much stick to the script every single night. Like you have to hit the mark. You have to mm-hmm. sing that song at that time. Is this giving you guys the freedom to just kind of go off the plan when you're up there?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes on purpose, sometimes not.
a lot of improv necessary in that room.
Yes, but because of our backgrounds, we are used to doing a set show. This is kind of in between. You know, it is kind of set, but we do have numbers that we will trade out, you know, every other night just for variety. When people cover, like with Ted on Broadway right now, we had Kristen Herzenberg with us for a while.
From Phantom as well.
Kevin Patrickwin is with us now, who was also with Phantom. You know, so that changes up a lot. You know, changes up our relationship on stage with each other, what we talk about, you know, and their numbers are all different. So there is a flow about it, but it is kind of a structured informality.
Well, I take it that that she did not sing Men of a Certain Age with you.
No.
Although she did offer to dress in drag and do it.
She
did
offer.
She's a sport.
But so, yeah. now interacting with the audience, is that kind of a new thing? Because let's face it, the Phantom, you know, wasn't in a, hey, what you got? What are you drinking down there?
Crivello at the end of some shows.
Well, right?
He do his Groucho impression. Yeah.
Just sometimes things happen, so we react to it. We just have a good time as it goes, but none of it's planned.
Yeah.
We think sometimes it's funny, and sometimes they think it's funny, and we don't know why, but we're all happy that everybody's having a good time.
Yeah, let's face it, the cell phones weren't going off in the middle of the French Revolution.
Exactly.
You know, so, yeah, well, that's great. So now, what is the overall... what's the overall goal for this? I mean, do you guys want to just continue doing the show here? Do you want to take it on the road? Do you want to do albums? Or I say albums, recordings?
We do have a
tapes,
CD.
8 tracks. Yeah.
We do have a CD out already. But our main goal would be kind of a combination of the both. What we would love to do, we want to start touring the show and taking it to different cities. You know, go out for a week or two, come back here and sit down and run it for a week or two here. Just kind of have the best of both worlds. You know, have a home base here where we can go off on our days off and perform one or two concerts here and there and then come back.
Is the show performing? You're at the point right now with the Fat Pack in Las Vegas where you're trying to develop, you're trying to get some momentum behind this.
Exactly.
Some support, for sure. Some word of mouth, tell people that there's this thing going on at the Plaza downtown. Is it performed to your satisfaction so far in terms of attendance, ticket sales, and buzz around the city? And if not, what do you need to do to really get there?
I think it's slower than we hoped for. But the exciting thing for us is that the audiences, we are seeing them grow. And the most exciting thing is after the show, we get to talk to the audience every night. And the reactions of people coming out are truly... A lot of times it's they're surprised.
Right.
This show is so different, and what we hear a lot is that it's so much better than they ever imagined. And so they do want to go out and tell people, and that's how it's growing. And so many people will come and they say, you know, our friends told us this, or you know, that sort of. So that word of mouth thing is working for us, but we're just still building up that big snowball.
It takes a little bit of description. After
being on our show, you'll at least get 5 more people.
We'll
I guarantee.
Two more.
Exactly.
And we appreciate that. We'll take them.
No, but yet I will. You know, I did not. I'll admit, I was one of those people that did not know what to expect, and the amount of talent that is up there is mind blowing.
Thanks.
Absolutely mind blowing. Just, I mean, incredible. You guys are just incredible. But yeah, it is. I do have to say, when I did hear, like I said, I pictured an F. And not a PH.
Like the Fat Boys. Remember the Fat Boys,
oh,
the rap band?
When, you know,
yeah,
Louis
they
Anderson,
were actually fat.
Louis Anderson just started in our room, too, and when he came in, he told us that he had actually thought a few years ago of putting together a three-comic act, of three fat comics, and calling them the Fat Pack.
Oh, my gosh.
But we took the name from him,
and now he's in your room.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's talk about that. That's kind of an important move, because he just opened there in that showroom.
Yeah, just last week.
And he's, he's the star that everybody knows that particular name right now. How's your relationship with him? Are you really depending upon him being kind of the bait to get some people in there, and then you can kind of get that audience?
Yeah, I think that's going to happen whether we want it to or not.
Right.
You know, I mean, he is a bigger draw, and he's known name, and he is the nicest man. He really wants to work with us, to help us. I mean, he is mentioning us in his show.
Yes, he is.
He is really wanting everything at the Plaza to be successful, because when everybody else is, so is he. And the same goes for, you know, the more people he gets, the more we get.
Have you thought about doing any cross-promotional work with him?
Well, we actually are staying after and meeting his audience as they come in, handing out all our stuff. And then we are going to do some promo stuff in his show.
I was going to say, like, come out and do a number or something in his show. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He has that open. He's doing this thing where he's rotating his opening acts.
Yes, we're going to do
right
that
now. Are you going to go in and...
Yeah.
Well, you guys have spent a lot of time at on the Strip. And, you know, downtown, there's this big downtown movement that is happening. And especially, it's really exciting what they're doing with entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How do you guys feel about the what's the difference in between being, you know, not on the main strip, being downtown? Is there, what's the different feel, different kind of crowd? What do you?
It's funny. It's I'm from the stage. It doesn't feel a lot different. We're really our audiences that are coming in. We're getting an awful lot of locals and a lot of visitors that have heard about us through locals. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of crowd that's coming in right now. Now, we're not getting a lot of foot traffic because we're still trying to build a reputation and stuff like that. So we're hoping that will come. It's just so it seems like such a great time to be downtown and to be part of that. The showroom we're in is so beautiful and vintage, and it just feels mm-hmm. like old time Vegas, and it feels so good and right for us to be there. Also, I mean, maybe I shouldn't say this, but I used to bring people to the Plaza as the first step when, you know, my friends were coming to town. I'm like, we're starting at the Plaza, and then you walk in there, and it was sort of my mm-hmm. joke on my visitors. But now as the Plaza has renovated, and just, I mean, every day that we go in there, there's something new and fun and more beautiful, and, you know, they're fixing it, and it's getting more and more exciting.
It is iconic, that restaurant, everything. I mean, it's a very iconic, it's very cool, and there is that kind of a vintage feel, because we talk about a lot on the show, much to, I think, our chagrin, I know my chagrin, that we feel like a lot of the showrooms are losing that old Vegas feel. They're going to theater seating, and they're going to that, you know, it's that kind of old Vegas vibe sometimes is kind of disappearing on the main strip. And so I think that the downtown hotels, what they're doing with their entertainment and the fact that you do have that old feel, and it's very hip right now. Yeah. Is hips, do people use hips mm-hmm. still? Is that a good word?
Yes,
hip.
Hep.
But it's true poppin'. About that room, about the room itself. It's a beautiful room. It's really an underappreciated and has, over time, as Dish mentioned, underutilized
and such great history
venue.
There, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fun to be part of that now.
You guys have a unique perspective on something that we've been talking about for years in Las Vegas, and that is the relationship our city's had with Broadway musicals mm-hmm. and maybe more specifically Broadway talent. I don't know that Las Vegas understands really necessarily as well as some other cities how great it is an achievement to be on stage in a Broadway caliber show. I think we've kind of more recently become to understand what that is. How does it feel for you guys who are on stage? Do you feel like, and especially in the case of the Fat Pack, that is appreciated, or is that an education process?
Actually, you know, it's funny because at the beginning of our show, we've reworked our show a little bit. And when we first opened, we didn't explain to everyone what our histories were until really the end of the show. And when people came in not knowing our histories, we got a mediocre sort of, these guys are good. But then we started telling them about our history at the top of the show now with a different kind of opening, and they are so much more with us. So there is a respect, I think, that that people, as soon as they hear that, you know, we have Jean Valjean from Les Miserables, and we have The Phantom from Broadway, and there's an excitement that builds right from our introduction, which is kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
There is that respect of Broadway and that sort of performance. But also throughout the show, then you get to know each of us personally. A friend of mine came to see the show who's a producer, and he was really funny. He saw it last summer at the Smith Center mm-hmm. when we first did it there.
Right.
And he was really funny because he told me that he came in. He was a little bit perturbed because his wife couldn't come with him that day. And he sat down. He thought, okay, who the hell are these guys? And he said to me at the end of the show, he thought, I do know who these guys are. And I like them, and I almost think that they're my friend, although we haven't met yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was nice that through our presentation of a little bit about our careers, he sort of got that familiarity with us, and he enjoyed it. And this guy's sort of a tough guy to
Went over.
I thought he was going to rip us to shreds.
I think the autobiographical arc, and I'm thinking about what you talk about, Randall, from the stage you talk about, you didn't have theater.
Yeah, not at all.
Little Mayberry town, right?
Yeah.
You had a movie theater nearby, but you didn't have
Well, 25 miles. That's nearby.
Yeah.
And you back then.
Hitchhiked.
And you walked with no shoes through
no
the
shoes,
snow.
Uphill both directions.
Just to watch Les Mis. But right, I mean, you kind of get you understand what it means to you personally to be at this point in your career.
Oh, yes, definitely. I did not discover theater until really like I started knowing a little bit about it my senior year of high school, but there was none to do. And then summer before college, I did a little community theater thing and thought, this is interesting. And when I got to school, most of the voice students who I knew because I was going into that, I knew them, and they were also in theater. So I just was kind of hanging out there just because they were my friends and really got really drawn into it. And I auditioned for the one show, got a part that had one line in it, a non-musical, and I was hooked. I loved it. I wanted to be there. And from then on, that's really all I concentrated on. And unfortunately, all my grades for everything else went way down because I was in theater from that moment
on. Worst thing that ever happened to
you. No, I mean, what...
If I could only be good at calculus.
Yeah, yes.
But I can hit that note. So now, in describing your... I find that so interesting that... without kind of having that environment where you're doing school plays and you're doing that kind of stuff and you have the local community theater and the, you know, performing arts school and stuff, how did you really get to know that you could sing?
You know, I sang a lot in church. Really, church was, I mean, there was no one that sang or played any instrument in either side of my family. So I was the black sheep of the family. I was music, you know.
But, it was the town of Footloose. Is where you grew up.
Really, you know, that's not far from the truth. It's still a dry county. You have to drive.
Oh,
you know, it's wow. But,
obviously, wow. I won't be visiting there.
Good thing this show's in Las Vegas. Really.
But yeah, I really got interested in music itself through church and some other kids my age, 13, 14, we all just decided to let's, you know, start our own little band, you know, and we rehearsed in the church, you know, the warehouse back, you know, where they stored everything, you know, behind the buildings and rehearse there and perform. And for the whole time I was in high school, we would perform here and there, you know, a couple times a month, just nothing ever really big came of it. But, you know, it was something that was fun for us and it just kept music in my life and you know, made me know that this is what I wanted to do in some aspect. You know, I loved singing.
Wow.
And Bruce, is there still a version of Forever Plaid out there? Is there touring versions of it? Where is that? Where's that title right now?
I think it's just maybe in more community, in high school, that sort of thing. I know the producer that produced us here still owns the rights for all casino towns. So I think there's the possibility that he's waiting to bring it back again. Of course, this time I'm too old. But,
there's
plus,
no
I
role.
Have another job.
No.
But you played it out really
you
far.
Are not.
Thompson always jokes about this, by the way. He's the plucky, fresh-faced, 50-year-old teenager when he introduces you.
And he's ripping into our songs.
Play
yes,
it.
He has.
You can still
played
it.
He has just a little wig work, right?
I have to say, before we wrap up, can I just get one line from Bring Him Home? Please.
Oh, you asked that. I'm not warmed up. Okay. God on high, hear my prayer. That's it.
Oh,
that was too long.
Fair enough.
Oh, I love that. I'm not warmed up, and then he sings like that. You know what I mean?
I thought he was
like,
going to really come
out. He goes
out
way out there.
I took it down a few steps. That's not the key that it's in.
That was beautiful. Thank you. That was just my own personal
a little spoken word
need
next time.
That I needed.
All right, gentlemen. Well, we are going to wrap it up here. Folks, the Fat Pack is one of the great underappreciated at this moment shows in Las Vegas. It's 5 p.m. at the Plaza Showroom, dark Mondays and Tuesdays.
Correct.
And is really worth support. And we'll have you guys back on again to do an update. But honestly, this is a show to get behind because it's a terrific time. And I'll be back to see you guys soon, and we'll have you back in here again.
Great. Thank you. Thanks so much.